This is the Lane 9 Project podcast, a production of the Lane 9 Project. My name is Heather Kaplan, and I'm here with my co-founder, Alexis Fairbanks. If you want to get in touch with us or have any questions about the work we do in raising awareness around eating disorders and body dysmorphia in sport at all levels, you can contact us at lane9project.org or follow us on Instagram at lane9project. Hello, Alexis. Happy spring break.
Hi, Heather. Good to see ya.
Yeah, we actually just got to see each other in person 2 days ago when I was in Colorado skiing and you came up to join me, which was lovely. Actually, I wanted to ask you something about that. I was wondering, so I've been skiing since I was probably 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So like way longer than I've been running. But and you grew up skiing, but you feel like you took a really long break from it and you're getting back to it. How does it feel to like get back into a sport and feel sort of like beginner level, maybe beginner to medium level skills?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I've thought about that actually a lot, not just with skiing, but also with like strength training as well. Because I skied growing up, but hearing you talk about like your experience skiing growing up, you definitely skied much more than I did. And I was like fine growing up, mostly just because as a kid, you don't have a lot of fear. But then I didn't ski for about 10 years, like at all. But even through high school, it was like once a year kind of thing. And then once college came along, it was like all running all the time. So skiing was just like, that's the thing that's going to get you injured. You're not doing it anymore. And so it's been a really long time. And getting back into it has been so fun. And this weekend was like so great. You challenged me to like get off my baby greens and finally do some blues again. And it was totally fine, but it's super humbling. And I have a hard time like going to like new exercise classes. I'm not really like a group exercise person typically, but I also find them really intimidating, or like pickleball is really big and I find that so fun and Tyler and I will go do it, but I get really intimidated if we have to play with like random people on the court because I'm just so used to like running. I've just been doing since middle school consistently, and so I feel like I can show up to any run club and like pretty much like hang with a group of people and be able to keep up. And I know like the etiquette of like running on a sidewalk like in a group of people, that type of thing. And so it's definitely anything that isn't running is like very humbling and intimidating a little bit. So it's been a fun experience though, to like challenge myself in a different way and kind of get back into that.
I grew up skiing, just for context here. Like I grew up just south of the Colorado border, so very close to a great ski resort, like also worth noting, right? Like skiing in Colorado is different than skiing in New York or Michigan or Pennsylvania or wherever. I wouldn't say it's like the best skiing in the country because I've never been to Tahoe, so I don't know. And I've also never skied in Vermont and New Hampshire, and I've heard like all of those places have great ski resorts, and I really have only skied in Colorado. But we grew up going almost every weekend during the winters, and then my sport being soccer in the fall, like I got to ski as much as I wanted because I didn't have anything in the spring that I was worried about. And I also feel like the injuries that the people I went to high school with usually got were like knee related injuries from skiing. Mm-hmm. And they were like jumping or like going through tree trails. And I'm like, I'm not doing any of that. Like, it's like not my problem to worry about. And I do have friends who have injured their knees just downhill skiing. Like I have a friend who I know is listening who I think tore her ACL skiing like not that long ago, like as an adult. So like, you know, there is still very much a risk, but that wasn't something that I was worried about as a kid. And so I grew up skiing a lot, and then also skied with in high school with a lot of guys who went really fast. And so like my only option was to like figure out how to catch up to them, because if I didn't, I was just like left behind for the day.
Yeah.
Like, that's not as fun. And now as an adult, I feel like it's taken me a couple of years to kind of get my ski legs back, just because I took so many years off from having kids and like living on the East Coast and only going back to Colorado like once a year. But I feel like I'm getting back to that place. And then I totally, you know, obviously relate to much of what you said about other sports, like showing up to something that you don't know as well, like rock climbing I've done in the last couple of years, and it's so hard for me. I have a huge fear of heights. And even though I know I'm attached to a rope and I cannot fall more than like an inch, it still feels very nerve-wracking to me. And swimming, I'm terrible at. Swimming is so humbling to me. And I kind of hate swimming, but I feel like it's something I would like to be better at.
I did a lot of swimming coming back from my injury, swimming and biking both. I find those both to be two really intimidating sports.
Yeah.
And like swimming, it feels so exposed. Like you're just there and everyone's in the pool and like you have to know the lane etiquette and all of that. I definitely found when that was really the first thing I could do post-surgery, even that took a while to get to, but I had to just like, I would go super early in the morning. So I was like the first one in the pool. And I just have this sense of like, everyone's like, why is she here? She's so slow. She's in my lane. And nobody's thinking that, right? Nobody would ever think that.
I don't know. But I've heard some stories of swimmers not being super people.
Yeah. But it's super, super intimidating. I definitely had to just like force myself to keep doing it day after day. And I ended up doing it a lot for a while, but now that I'm running again, I haven't gone in like a year and I'd like to, but now it's like the fear all over again.
No, I know. I've never gotten in a good group of swimming. And when I did swim, I can't even say regularly, but I went more than a few times one season when I couldn't run for very long. I just felt like, the beginner runner who just sprints and then gets tired. And I'm like, I literally cannot slow down. I'm already going so slow. I only have one speed and yet I'm so tired. So hard.
Yeah. I definitely don't know how to go like different paces while swimming. It's just like,
there's one speed and it's slow and it feels very hard.
I think just thinking about those experiences, whether it's like skiing or swimming or going to an exercise class, for those of us who are more experienced runners, I always try to remind myself of those feelings that I have when going into something new too. Because if I'm at like a group run or something, it seems like so simple and easy. But I know like for most people, going to like a spin class isn't that scary, but for me it is. And I think it's just a good reminder that like, if you're getting into running, it can be just as intimidating of a sport with the same like elitist feeling as biking or swimming or rock climbing.
Yeah. And it can feel really hard for a long time.
Yeah. Yes.
Even though it's something that should feel sort of natural, but it kind of doesn't. I don't know. All right. What else is going on besides skiing?
Well, I want to hear about your race.
Yeah. So last time we talked, I was maybe a week out, a couple days out from running the New York City half. And that was now a little over a week ago. I would say the short version is spending a weekend in New York is one of my favorite things to do. I don't want to spend more than a weekend in New York, but I love being there for a weekend. It feels like the perfect amount of time for me. And I feel like every time I go, I get a little bit more comfortable navigating the city, which feels very good. Just being able to say, okay, I need to get on this train to go to that train to go to this neighborhood. I like feeling more comfortable in the city. But yeah, overall, it was a great weekend in New York. Exactly what I wanted out of the weekend, just getting to see a couple of people in person that I haven't seen in a long time. I went to Alley on the Run's live show with Emily Sisson, which this is not Alley's fault, but had a lot of people that did not get chairs. So we were sitting, or sorry, we were standing and we stood for an hour.
Ugh.
And I'm guessing most people were running the next day. So that was not ideal, but it is what it is. It was still fun. And then went to the expo and then went and met my friends for lunch. And I kind of like got back to my friend's apartment and realized that I had been on my feet for about 8 hours. So
not ideal.
Not ideal. And one of our kids was really sick the week before. So our sleep was honestly worse than it was when he was a newborn. Like that's how little sleep we got. Yeah. He just couldn't get comfortable and couldn't fall asleep. We tried everything we could think of. And it was like 1 or 2 in the morning for like 3 nights in a row before he was even asleep. So all things considered, like not a great lead up to a race and also not a great way to spend the day before a race. But I still had a great time. I felt really tired during the run. I think that I kind of started it and could feel the fatigue pretty early on in my legs. Like they just did not have any spunk to them at all.
Yeah.
And I started off probably a little bit faster than I should have. If you look at the splits on my, like the New York City or the New York Roadrunners app has, you know, 5K, 10K, 15K, 20K. And it looks pretty consistent if you just take 3 mile jumps at a time. But if you look at the actual mile splits, I texted Mary and I was like, these are comical. They are all over the place.
All There's over.
No consistency at all. The average was somehow very consistent, but the paces per mile themselves, not at all. And I feel like about halfway through, knowing that I definitely was not going to run anywhere close to what I had wanted to, there was just a lot of mental energy spent on how can I sort of salvage the day and still have a good experience and not just feel so fatigued the whole time? And how can I be gentle to myself right now? Because it was really tempting to be like, you ran faster at a half marathon 6 months ago and you're in better shape now than you were then. Why?
Yeah.
Just like there's so many things that my brain wanted to say to itself, and a whole lot of that like mental monologue, or I guess dialogue really, of like, this can be true and this can also be true. And this is a hard day, but it can also be some sort of fun, like in some way, you know? And I've never run a race in New York. This is the first time I've ever done a New York Roadrunners race or anything in New York. So that I tried to just be like, enjoy it. Take it in. You'll be back. You'll do this again. It will feel better next time somehow. I don't know. Maybe it won't. I don't know. And at one point I sort of played this game with myself of like, could you run past a certain time, which I'm not going to say because it's all relative to everybody listening. Like our times are our times. But I was like, if it takes you longer than this amount of time, like, couldn't you be okay with that? Because I kind of went in thinking like, I really want to run this time. And at the very least, I want to run faster than I did in October when I took it pretty moderately the whole time. And I was not in as good a shape as I think I am now comparatively. And so I just got to this place where I was like, if it's not only slower than last October, but also slower than you've run in a really long time, like, could you just be okay with that? Can you find a place in your brain where you can just accept that that's going to be true? And I mean, at a certain point, there's no option. Like you're going to run what you're going to run, right? So it was kind of just like, if this is inevitable, find a way to just be okay with that. And I ended up coming in kind of close to what I ran the half in last October, which a little is honestly surprising to me. But yeah, it was like a mental exercise in being gentle, putting your ego aside, and also trying to enjoy a race to some extent that is actually like a really great event overall.
Yeah.
If I can kind of zoom out and take myself out of how I felt in those exact moments and look at the race itself as a whole, it was such a fun race and it's such a great event and it's so well organized. I would 100% do it again. But those days are tough.
Yeah. I think that's so relatable because we all have those days, and sometimes they're like the more common day, or those days that are like just okay races are more often more common than those like A plus days. And what I think is funny is that the races that we run the fastest typically end up like in retrospect feeling the easiest, because that's why we ran the fastest, right? Everything felt good. Everything was clicking. You're just kind of flowing. And so you go for it. But the like mental calculations you're making of like, okay, I don't have it today. And like, I don't know if you have this experience. I had this experience at CIM where I really had to like talk myself through it and remind myself that it was physical and not just mental. I have this habit of if I run poorly of beating myself up for it and thinking that I just made a bad choice. I wasn't tough enough. I wasn't strong enough. And oftentimes like it is physical. Like, of course there are times when your mind gives up before your body does, but there are times where your body just doesn't have it. It sounds like that was the day for you. And for me in CIM, I started throwing up at mile 14. Like, no, I didn't have it. And it wasn't, but there was parts of me, you know, a few miles after that, that was like, just go faster. Like, why are you giving up? And I had to remind myself of like, no, it's okay. Like, it's just not the day. And we're going to get through it. And we're going to finish a marathon. And we're going to be proud. And
yeah,
that's so tough to do, though.
100%. I mean, there was no vomit for me.
Happy for you.
Yeah. But yeah, 100%. I knew, again, very early on, like my legs did not have it. There was no mental gymnastics I could do to change anything about how that day went.
Yeah.
And I do think that there is so much narrative around, what is it? Like, people will be like, oh, running is 90% mental and 10% physical, or, you know, make up some like non-empirical stat that they just feel like is going to be motivating to you. And maybe on some days that's true, but especially at this point in my running process, like having done it for this long, I know exactly what those days feel like and what they don't feel like. And this was very much an exercise in like, could you get to 7 miles before you walk? No, 6. Okay, cool. It was 6. Like, whatever, you know, and there was no like convincing myself that I was going to go any faster. I also remember having one marathon. It was Marine Corps. I remember being in Crystal City, which is, for folks who don't know, it's Northern Virginia. So it's once you've crossed over this very long, horrible bridge.
So quiet, uphill, lonely,
hot, and so you get over the bridge, and I don't know if this is still the course, but you kind of do this long out and back through an area of Arlington called Crystal City near the airport, whatever, and it's usually really crowded and very loud and fun, especially getting off the bridge. It's like a stark contrast, but you're at mile, what, 21, 22 or something, maybe a little further than that. And I remember one year I was trying to run probably 3:30 or 3:35, and I was probably close, like going to meet that goal. But I remember telling myself, this is as hard as you remember it being. Because I had run a few marathons, and in hindsight, I would finish and be like, oh, I bet for that mile, it could have gone a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Or I could have like pushed it a little more through this one section if I had just tried, because you just forget immediately how hard it actually is, or we would never do it again. True of many things we'll talk about today. So, but I remember telling myself, you feel like this is hard, things hurt. And when you look back on this, I remember being like, future Heather, this was hard. Don't you dare try to tell yourself otherwise.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's such a good point, because even just most recently when I ran Houston and I ran a 6-minute personal best and had a really great race, and I was very, very happy and excited with it. And I was so close to my goal that, you know, in the course of 26 miles, being 2 minutes away from the goal that I had breaking three, I thought, well, if I had just had a few seconds in this mile, a few seconds here, like, I started kind of going down that rabbit hole of like, oh, I could have maybe these miles I took a little easy and ran with these girls. It was like chatting. If I didn't do that, maybe. And like, no good comes from that, right? Ultimately, like, got to the end and was exhausted. I ran a good race. So like, it was hard. I did the best I could, but it's, you just forget so quickly, and you're like, oh, maybe I could have done this differently. But I think it kind of discounts like the mental side of running is such a big part, but we also, with like mantras like, oh, it's like 90% mental, 10% physical, we also discount like the physical aspect that is actually such a huge part of it. And it's like for someone like, and for someone like you with children and like a busy life and not sleeping at all the week before, like, you can't mental your way out of that. You can't mental your way out of 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night and a sick kid and 8 hours on your feet the day before a race. Like, no amount of mental toughness like disregards those things, and I think that's important to remember and keep in perspective.
And like, a little perspective I could give myself too is, when I finished, I'm like, that's still faster than I would have done a long run today. If I had just done a long run, I would have taken it way easier and it would have taken a lot more time. So,
yeah. And you have another race coming up in what, about 2 months-ish?
Yeah, 2 months from yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was definitely a training run. And I think to your point, it really is way more common to have like a slightly off day than to just have these magical days. But the magical days are what stand out to us and what people are also sort of drawn to hearing about, right? So, yeah. Anyways, what's going on with your training?
And, you know, kind of along the same theme, I've had a lot of those just like, just okay days. When we talked last, I was looking for a half marathon to run. And I shared this with you when we were skiing the other day, but I had just, after running Houston in January, I decided like, okay, in the spring, I'm going to run a fast half marathon, try to maybe like PR, get close to that. And then spring has just been kind of chugging along, and all of a sudden it's almost April and I hadn't signed up for anything. And a week or two ago, I had a workout and I actually started the workout on a Tuesday because I was going skiing the next day. Tyler and I, my husband and I, took a personal day to go skiing on a Wednesday. It was great. Then we ended up following that up by two snow days. So we had a nice little two-day work great. Week.
Yeah.
But on Tuesday, I was trying to do my workout, which was supposed to be Wednesday. And it was a ladder workout that was like a, I can't even remember now, but I think like a 1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 1 minute kind of thing. And I tried it on Tuesday, got halfway through the first 3 minute interval and just like dead stopped because my body, I just, the first two intervals were okay. I got to that 3 minute one and I could just tell I wasn't going to be able to finish the workout. And so I didn't try to just push through it. And I figured I had only done about 3 minutes of tough work that day. So if I felt okay, I was going to try again on Thursday.
Yeah.
Tried again on Thursday. Got to the same spot in the workout and just bailed again. And I was frustrated at first, but it kind of got the wheels turning. And I was asking myself, like, why are you rushing to focus on the half marathon this spring? Like, I felt like I was running out of time in terms of my training to run a strong half. And so it got me thinking, and it led to the decision that I'm not going to run a half in the spring. I'm going to run the 5K on the schedule and then a 10K Boulder on the schedule. And then I'm just going to wait and focus on the half in the fall, which has been kind of a relief to just take that pressure off of myself. Because then last week, again, just had those like meh workouts where I finished the workouts. They were fine. The paces were a little off, nothing horrible, but just like, things don't feel like they're necessarily clicking right now. And I think there are some reasons for that, mostly related to just like not sleeping as well as I would like to. So not feeling super recovered. Although this morning, my Whoop said I am 99% recovered. So feeling very proud of that.
I took
a rest day yesterday. So that is where that came from. So hopefully we can be on that trajectory.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just kind of like lots of okay workouts, but kind of reminding myself that that is the more common type of run to have, and that stacking a bunch of like just okay workouts is what leads to progress. The goal is not to be PRing in our workouts or having those A+ days in workouts. Like, we want that to come in the races. And so just keeping that in perspective and just kind of chugging along.
Yeah. I know. I do feel like maybe it's the result of spending a little too much time on Instagram or Strava or wherever we spend our time. I'm not on Strava, but I know a lot of people are. Even if it's somebody else had like a very okay run, but they're posting just like the quick summary of that, like you don't get that full picture, right? So you're still thinking like, oh, they probably felt better. Like, we always are going to assume people felt better than they did. Right. So like, if we can kind of zoom out and recognize that we are so focused on like what we see other people doing, and I think this is very much like a common theme in running is like I see professional runners posting their training and then like my friends posting their training and we go to a group run and it seems like everybody feels good, but I don't. Like, nope. The most I think the most common experience is we feel just okay most of the time.
Yeah. And as I was thinking before we jumped on here and thinking about my training, earlier today I saw this post that Steve Magnus posted. He's like a running coach and he has some books. And the post says, if you try to optimize everything, you suck the joy out of it. You know this. What happens when many make their hobby their job, it often loses its appeal. Don't over-optimize. Keep the joy and have fun. Make sure you play in your pursuits, not just work. And reading that really got me thinking about where I am in training right now, because before the marathons, like in December and January, I was so hyper-focused on training and making a lot of decisions to optimize my training and my running. And I don't regret that. And that's what I wanted to do then. But I often have throughout the years kind of lived in that state of like always putting running before everything else and focusing on running over like once in a while staying out late with friends or like going to a concert or skiing is a huge example for me that like running is the whole reason I didn't do that for so many years. And it's something that I really, really enjoy. And after Houston in January, I told myself like, this is the time where you're gonna take advantage of that ski pass you spent hundreds of dollars on.
So many dollars. Yes.
Not run sometimes, and that's gonna be okay. You're gonna skip a few runs and you're gonna be cross training with skiing and it's gonna be fine. And I still like, I struggle with that. I struggle with not feeling guilty about that. And that post just kind of reminded me like, we are not professional athletes. Professional athletes do have to optimize. They have to make those sacrifices. I was on the ski lift with my husband and he's like, you get to do this. I'm like, you're right. I can just like skip this easy run and go skiing instead. And I think in all aspects of like running or sleep, like before CIM, I've never been a great sleeper and I was so hyper focused on trying to get good rest and good sleep that it just completely
like backfires, like
backfired and I wasn't sleeping at all.
Yeah.
And now that I'm not training as hard right now and I'm like, okay, like just do your best. Now I'm sleeping and still not as great as I like to, because again, not a great sleeper, but I'm not laying awake in bed for hours. I'm falling asleep. Because I'm just not over analyzing it and trying to like over optimize it, which I think so many of us in our like athletic pursuits, which are valid and it's awesome to have big goals, but like again, like running is a part of our lives. It's not our whole lives, or it shouldn't be, because we don't get paid to do it.
I know. I mean, honestly, like I've thought this my entire process with running, because again, it was never something I was competitive at or like in the top whatever percentage. Like I mostly have always done it for fun and for like personal challenge fulfillment, etc. I would not want running to be my job. That doesn't sound fun to me. It sounds incredibly stressful and exhausting.
Really and exhausting.
I was thinking while you were talking about Jess Tawn or Jess McLean Tawn, however folks know her, I just saw yesterday that she announced she's signing with Brooks again. So she was previously with Brooks as a professional athlete. And even though I have heard her on many podcast interviews since the trials where she finished fourth in the Olympic marathon trials, and she said she was open to sponsorship again, the post yesterday and the statement that they made collaboratively between Jess and Brooks was like, we're going to trust her process and that she's going to do it her own way and she's going to figure out what works for her. And I kind of wonder if she will end up keeping at least one of her jobs. My understanding is she works part-time for a nonprofit organization and then does some consulting as well for marketing. And it sounds like for her, being able to find that balance between having running as a part of her life and a thing that still gave her joy but was not everything, and then having a job, whatever job that is, doesn't matter, it's helpful. And then you have like Kira D'Amato, who I don't know if she's still doing this, but for a while was a real estate agent. Sarah Vaughn, also a real estate agent. Like things that they do that kind of fit into their running lifestyle and like what they need to do for training at that level that still allow them to have different outlets and not put all their eggs in one basket, right? Yeah.
Dakota Lindworm too.
Oh,
she
right.
made the team and
she's a paralegal.
She works. Yep. Yeah. And Jess McLean talked on a various podcast about how she was open to sponsors, but it would need to look a certain way because it was just when she was all in on professional running, it just didn't work well for her. And so it is interesting, like even not all professional runners put everything into it. So those of us who are just doing this for like quote unquote fun, we need to let it be fun.
Let it be fun. Yeah. And not, I also like, I'm always a little wary of using just as a qualifier because it can still mean a lot to you, right? It can still be many, many things to you. Like we kind of briefly touched on in our episode with Kara Bozzi that running or movement, sport, exercise, insert whatever, can really give us a lot. Like it can meet a lot of our emotional needs as humans. And then for each individual, there is a lot to be said for finding that balance between like how much of yourself and your brain space and your mental load and your literal energy do you give to this thing before it's not fun anymore. And it just is a grind and it literally keeps you up at night. Like then it's not fun anymore.
Yeah. And like, what's the balance of like, it is giving you those things and not taking something else.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting. So we were in Keystone with some friends over a long weekend, and the two friends that we were visiting are a couple, and one of them runs and one of them used to run and she doesn't anymore. And we were talking about running and she's like, I just never had a runner's high. Like I would kind of do it for function, like it's exercise and I think it's good for me, et cetera. And it's like an easy kind of relatively low cost thing to do versus like having a pool membership and having all the gear or having a bike. Mm-hmm. And blah, blah. She also likes to ride her bike, but anyway, she was just kind of saying in short, like she's never really enjoyed it. So she's never been drawn to it. And which I was like, that's fair. Like not everybody loves the same thing, you know? And she also said, she was like really hesitant to say this, but she's like, I just feel like some runners like maybe take it a little too far and it's maybe a little bit not healthy. And I was like, 100%.
Yes. Many
like,
of them.
She's like, I didn't want to offend you. Like, I don't know. And I was like, that was like not a personal, hopefully. Well, I don't think it was like a personal reflection on me, but she was just like, I don't know. I just feel like when I've been in running spaces, like it just feels really intense. And when I observe running, what people share about running online, it just feels like sometimes it maybe kind of crosses a line into like being a little too much. And I was like, you know, I have like a whole organization about that.
Not offending, you're spot on.
Right. Well, and it was like interesting for me to have that quote unquote outsider's perspective that she was kind of wondering, like, are you all aware that sometimes you take it too far?
Yeah.
Like, I think most of us know. Yeah. I think we're aware. Or we're working on it. We're all working on it.
Yes. It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress.
Okay, well, let's switch gears real quick because we've already been chatting for a while. I just wanted to touch base, like circle back. Let me use all the jargon there to something we talked about a few weeks ago, which was this idea of moms running like post baby and just like succeeding and all of these great things. That conversation started from Ellie winning the 3000 meter world champs and just to like how, yes, that is amazing. And it's the less common experience, but it's the thing that gets more coverage. So then it makes it seem like everybody's coming back and bouncing back from having a baby and having these great breakthroughs. And so this past week, and I saw this article, it was linked in Fast Women, and it was an article around Caitlin Phillips, who talked about her postpartum struggles, and her plan was to run the Olympic trials, but is about 9 months postpartum, I think it said, or maybe five months, maybe less than that. Only five. Yeah. And she right now like can't really run much at all. I think it said she's like run walking every other day for only about 10 minutes or so. Wanted to bring that article up because that was highlighting kind of that opposite story. And I think too about like Kara Goucher has talked many times about her story. And although her postpartum comeback was quote unquote successful on paper, she has talked so much about how damaging it was to her physical and mental health. And so it was good to see another perspective kind of highlighted, because I think that is the more frequent experience.
Far more common. Yeah, for sure. So reading that article reminded me too that somebody that I follow and have known for a long time in the running space online and have met in person a few times posted somewhat recently, maybe in the last couple of days, that she's a few months postpartum. I can't remember how many, maybe 4 or 5 months postpartum as well, and is having some pelvic floor issues, and posted like, I just feel like nobody talks about this and people are suffering in silence. And a lot of people talk about it, but if you don't have any context for that, or it's not the thing you're going through in the moment, it is really easy to see that content and just keep going and forget about it. But in this article, she's talking about like, she's saying like, I have this birth injury and these specialists, like multiple physical therapists, physicians, et cetera, like cannot figure out exactly what's going on. And didn't specify that she's been to a pelvic floor PT. I'm just hoping that at least one of those physical therapists was a pelvic floor PT, because not all physical therapists are pelvic floor PTs. But there is so much that goes into coming back to running. And I feel like we are in an era of women and birthing people running where we mostly understand, if you've seen any content about this, that pelvic floor PT is going to be helpful. It's not going to be a cure-all. You can go through many, many months of PT and still have a lot of issues running. Like, it doesn't solve the issue for everybody. But if you're not starting with that, it's probably going to be really tough to run, no matter what kind of birth you have. Like, this is C-section, vaginal, like there's not really many other options. One of those two. But even like between those two experiences, like a lot of different things can be true for people. So I feel like there has definitely been, I would say, like a massive increase in content around postpartum running and what's going to help you, any given body, like get back to running in some capacity. And yet it is still very true that even with all those things, it can still feel really hard for a really long time.
I think the same is true for injuries too, just like any general injury is like, and I'm thinking about resources as well. And we probably touched on that last time. Like, Ellie has the best resources in the world. She is one of the best sponsored athletes in the world. And even Caitlin Phillips has likely far more resources than the everyday runner. And that plays a role too. But then you can be Kara Goucher on top of the world and in theory have access to those resources, but no one's giving them to you. Right. So there's just so much. And I think injuries are the same, right? Where people have very different experiences coming back from injuries, different access to resources, your body responds differently. Carissa Schweitzer just ran the 10 as her first race coming back from Hägglunds surgery. Which she had in the fall. That's the same surgery I had, and it took me more than a year to be able to run without significant pain. And that's just vastly different, and like some of that might be resources, but I also like, I worked with a great PT that specializes working with runners, but our bodies just respond differently, and so just interesting connections to see there.
Yeah. And I think even, you know, we want to assume that the highest level athletes in the world have some of the best resources. But my understanding is, again, based on just like consuming content around in this space, is like, it's often up to them to find those things. Like, I don't think for most professional athletes, especially parents, anyone's being like, here's the best pelvic floor physical therapist in the world. Like, go make an appointment. It's like, you still have to do a lot of that. And the mental load is huge. Finding somebody near you with that specialty maybe takes your insurance if you're lucky. If not, you're paying hundreds of dollars out of pocket. I've done both. Like, was super grateful to have at least one pelvic floor PT that took my insurance. There's the time of the appointments. There's the like in between maintenance of it all. And again, like, you can do all of those things and still, to your point, have a really long journey back to some form of fitness. I also read that article that you're referencing about Caitlin Phillips wanting to, like, she had qualified for the 2024 Olympic trials. I think it would have been her fourth, or she's qualified three times. So maybe that would have been her third. I don't know. She's qualified multiple times. She's run it multiple times. And her assumption was that at 4 or 5 months postpartum, she was going to be able to run that marathon. That alone to me is very wild, right? Like, that we culturally think as athletes at any level, I can be 4 months postpartum and running a high level marathon.
Yeah. Like,
red flag number one to me.
Yeah.
Not like, not to blame her for that assumption at all. Like,
no,
we see that all the time. I mean, Steph Bruce ran the 2024 Olympic trials, I think 4 months postpartum, and she came in the back of the pack, which is really unusual for her. She's a professional marathoner and has been for like 2 decades. And like, I don't know, kudos to her for running and being out there and being honest about the process.
Yeah, I think it's so hard because we celebrate those things. And if she was able to do that in a healthy way, like, great for her. Let's celebrate that. And yeah, most people don't have that quick recovery and come back, and not like even just the physical aspect of giving birth, but then the late night up with a crying baby, the breastfeeding. And I don't even have a kid, so I can't speak to it that much, but there's so many factors that can make a difference in your timeline of coming back. So it's one of those interesting things, because we want to celebrate the women who can do it and their bodies allow them to do it in a healthy way, and also acknowledge that, like, if you're not there, that's okay too.
I don't know.
So different.
I almost feel like the celebrating is maybe like not even the right way to approach that. It's like, maybe there's a shift in consuming, for lack of a better word, like this content around parents running, because it's sort of the same as like commenting on somebody's body if they lost weight. Right? And then you're quote unquote celebrating them because you see it as an achievement, which is a symptom of the problem, right? That we like create this world in which like you're better if you're smaller and you've achieved something if you've lost weight. And that is all like diet culture narrative, right? And I think that to me, it seems sort of similar when you put it in the context of new parents, especially birthing parents, running and getting back to training or whatever their sport is, because there is this celebration and like awe and inspiration of the people who do it, like the few people who do it without issue and without mental or physical injury or like negative impact on either of those things. And we see that and we're like, oh, it's amazing. And like, it's something. Like, I don't know what the word is. It's something. And like, could it be equally as quote unquote interesting to us if we see people being really honest about what all of that takes, right? I don't know. I don't have answers, but as someone who has navigated this space now for 6 years, it is like, I don't want to take away anybody's accomplishment, especially like a professional athlete who goes in and wins a gold medal at a world championship, right? But I do wish that there was less focus on that being so amazing because she's a parent and her baby just turned one. And then like thinking of all the parents out there, like Caitlin and many of us who run for quote unquote fun, like, is it, are we running for fun? That like, yeah, there's just so many different ways that that process can go. And it's hard to figure out like where you fit into that narrative, I guess, when the celebration is, look at these people who came back so quickly and ran so well, right?
Yeah. And like, it should be celebrating, you know, Caitlin Phillips, who made the decision that her body wasn't ready, celebrating that just as much.
I don't know. I think this will be just an ongoing topic for us. And I'd be curious to hear from folks, like, I don't know if this is interesting to them at all. I don't know how many people in our space are parents. I know when we started this, I wasn't. And mm-hmm. I have become a parent times three in the last 6 years. So it's certainly like always top of mind for me. And it's a lot of the content that I consume in the running space. But I don't know. Yeah, I would be curious if you're listening, like send us some feedback, because I'm just wondering how that lands for you, what it makes you think about. And again, like this is very much all the same thing, put it into the context of injury and someone's timeline for injury, right? Like it doesn't have to be the parenting space. It can also be like, oh, Carissa Schweizer. I don't know how to say her last name.
I probably said it wrong. I'm not sure.
Like coming back from this Hagelin surgery, and maybe the typical recovery timeline is 2 years, but she happened to get through it to compete again in 6 months. Like that's also pretty wild, right? To see that. Okay. Last lap. We ask these questions of our guests, but I don't know. I think I have kind of answered them to some extent because I do all of these. So I'm going to have you answer them on this one. Okay. It's the last mile of a marathon or the end of a run. What's the song that you want to hear in your headphones?
I'm very much a basic Swiftie. And my number one running song is Don't Blame Me from Reputation. It is a great running song. So that's my choice.
Don't Blame Me. We'll add it to our Lane 9 Spotify playlist. That doesn't exist yet, but maybe it will soon.
We got to get a few more songs and then we can start putting it together.
We're getting a pretty solid list so far. Okay. I think the next one is group run, solo run, or friend run.
I prefer like a 1 to 2 friends run so that you're distracted. You're not all by yourself, mm-hmm. but the big groups are a little overwhelming. I like to have those like 1 or 2 friend runs where you can like talk about all the life things.
Yes. What is the running product that should be sponsoring you because you're constantly evangelizing them to your friends?
mine is the Koala Clip. Do you know what that is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. It's like the little clip for your phone. It goes in the back of your sports bra. And now I feel like so many sports bras are coming out with the phone pocket in the back now, but I've been using my Koala Clip for many years now. I've gone through maybe like 4 of them. Oh, and wow. Now I have a couple extras where I have one that I just keep in my car for when I have after school runs and I forget it. Got one in my gym bag. I've got one at home. I just think it's the best.
Okay. Do you also have a sports bra with that pocket? I have one.
I don't.
Okay. I was wondering if you feel like it's any easier to take your phone out of the Koala Clip versus a sports bra pocket. But somebody report back to us if they have a hot take on that. Last but not least, and I love that I have these memorized now. What is a recent running moment outside of a race that you feel proud of?
And not super recent. Well, I guess it's like kind of it involves racing, but just coming back from surgery and getting back to not just racing, but consistently training. That was just a really hard time of having surgery and then cross training for so long and slowly, slowly getting back into it. So I'm proud that I was able to handle that and stay mentally sane and get back to running and really focus now on like the things that are going to keep me healthy so that I can continue.
I love that. I also love that we have both Pillow Troy and Big Troy on the couch, and I'm somehow just noticing that behind you.
Yeah, that's usually real Troy and Pillow Troy are typically on the couch all day, every day. So,
oh my gosh, I meant to text you this earlier, but I got an email today from Troy Fairbanks.
Oh my gosh. Weird.
It's a prank.
My dog is emailing you.
It was definitely spam. It did not go to my spam folder, but it should have. I was like, I never signed up for this email list, Troy. I don't know what you're doing, but the dog is moonlighting as a small like business
glaring at you.
All right. Thanks for this check-in. We will talk again soon. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with a guest episode, but we do have a couple of requests for you before you go. We'd love to hear your hot takes on anything we talked about today. If these things are resonating with you, you can email us lane9project@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram @lane9project, and you can contact us via our website, lane9project.org. If you haven't yet, we'd love for you to leave a rating and or a review of the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to episodes, which can help the show reach more ears, or just share it with a friend, somebody that you think might appreciate and relate to this conversation. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next time.